We know as math educators that the beliefs students have about math and the past experiences they bring with them impact how they approach and engage in math lessons. Even our own experiences play a part in what teaching and learning look like in the classroom. I recently had a chance to catch up with Chase Orton, author of The Imperfect and Unfinished Math Teacher, to talk about how we can develop stronger classroom communities for students that change their math stories. We also talked about creating more collaborative professional communities for ourselves so that our own math stories continue to evolve. I hope you enjoy this interview with Chase. Chase, welcome to the show. I am so glad that you are joining me today.
It's an honor to be here. So thank you for having me, and I'm excited to geek out with you.
We are going to jump right in. I have got a question for you that I think will really frame our discussion today. But I'd love to hear from you, what makes teaching math worth it in your eyes?
Yeah, I think it's about feeling that energy and joy, that human data that we can feel and see in the classroom every day, like being able to create communities where all of our students are thriving. And I mean this even for K-5 teachers who identify as multiple subject teachers, right, and teaching multiple subjects, or middle and high school teachers that are teaching several sections of math. Every math period, we want this community where students are thriving, and that they're developing a positive math identity, and they're developing a positive and healthy sense of agency as a mathematical thinker. And so I think that that's the joy for me, is having students develop a love of mathematics and a joy for math class, a joy for being there and learning with others, and they feel like they can belong and they feel valued. And that is what we really value as teachers. It makes it worth it, is that energy, right? That joy that we get. And I want teachers to have more of that. I want math class to be a more humanizing place for not just students, but also the teachers that are working there as well.
I think, you know, that feels like a big ask, but I love the work that you're doing. And I don't feel like it has to be a big ask. I feel like the classroom, that really is possible for the classroom. And I know that one thing that you talked about when you came and you spoke to our teachers was you talked about math stories and the role that that plays in the math classroom. I'd love to hear what you mean by math stories.
Yeah, well, every single person has a math story. You have a math story, I have a math story, every listener has a math story. And if you went to math class in the United States, and probably even Canada as well, we all oftentimes have a similar math story, a similar idea about the script of math class and how math class is supposed to go. And as a result of that, we have a mathematical identity, our beliefs about our math abilities. And those beliefs about our abilities, our identity, affect our agency, right? There's always this interplay between our identity and our agency, and right, and our beliefs about ourselves and our actions and what we take. And together they form a story that we continue to tell ourselves about our relationship with math. And oftentimes that's not great, right? We were kind of talking about that earlier, that a lot of us don't have a healthy relationship with mathematics. A big reason for that is because of that's what math class showed them. Math class showed them that they're not good at that specific type of mathematics. And so when people talk to me about, they say they're not a math person, they're saying that they have an unhealthy relationship with math. And I tell them, like, you may not have been good at math class, but that does not mean that you're not good at mathematics. I'm sure that you're brilliant and capable of thinking about the mathematics that we teach young children and adolescents in school. And I try to reframe it that that math class gave you a negative experience. And I'm sorry for that as somebody in the field, but it's a common thing. And I really try to shift the attention that there's a difference between your math identity and your math story and what math class showed you. But for most of us, it's an interrelated thing. And so I invite teachers to think about that math story as a core part of their professional identity, that the purpose of math class is to, on the one hand, teach students mathematical content, right? And we want them to learn more mathematics, but there's also this identity and agency piece, this equity piece, right? Access and providing meaningful and human outcomes in the classroom as well, that we want students to kind of really develop this positive math story. And so I invite teachers to think of themselves less as teachers of content and more as stewards, right? Caretakers of this math story that we're handing down through the generations, right? and through the grade levels. And so I invite teachers to think about a math story, think about the math stories that they want their students to have, and really ground their practice in that. Because a lot of times we run into a lot of pitfalls working in the system that only seems to care about measuring content, how much content students have learned. And while that's important, learning math content, I invite teachers to really, K-12, really be thinking about the math stories that we're creating and what we want to create, and having those conversations vertically throughout our profession. So that's kind of what I talk about as a math story, is really thinking about the social justice pieces, the access, the equity pieces, the identity and agency, and thinking about that at the forefront, and developing that community first, and then viewing the thinking about the content. And I think sometimes we get it backwards.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting. Something that came up for me when you were talking about, students as part of their math story, they may have been bad at math class, but they never truly experienced math. Have you ever heard Tracy Zager talk about the front and back of math?
I've heard Tracy Zager talk quite a bit, and I may be familiar with this idea. Tell us more.
Yeah. So, she credits somebody else for this idea, and I can't remember who she credits, but it's in her book. And this was so eye-opening to me. She talked about the front and back of math around, you know, when students come to us and they say, like, I don't like math, or, you know, essentially they just don't like math. They don't feel comfortable in it. It's likely because they've experienced the front of math. And she relates it to a restaurant. When you think about when you walk into a restaurant as a guest, it's very orderly. Everything has like a system. It's very clean. But then behind the scene, the back of math, so thinking about the kitchen, it's usually very messy and creative, and there's pasta sauce flying on the wall. And, you know, the chef is maybe using a different combination of spices, and it's usually loud and people are yelling out orders. But all of that is what creates the amazing experience that on the front looks very orderly. And to me, I just thought this was like such a good visual. I probably did not explain it nearly as well as she does, but I thought this was such a good visual for a lot of times in classrooms, we only expose students to the front, like the rules and the procedures and the algorithms. And it's like, oh my goodness, but you've not seen the patterns and the beauty of just in the empowerment that comes from the struggle and overcoming that. And I think that when, you know, the math stories only include the front of math, that's when students make these judgments about themselves as learners. And they don't get I think the back of math is where we can create like that humanizing experience that you talk about.
Yeah. So let's continue this metaphor a little bit. I don't know where we're going here, but let's continue this metaphor.
Let's do it.
You have a food critic coming in. Right? They're really only judging the front of the house. What is their experience on the front end of the house? And so everything can be about what is on that critic's rubric, right? How are we going to be graded? Oh, this critic likes this. And now we're going to create almost an artificial experience just to try to meet, you know, this person's content standards about what it means to be a good restaurant. And I think we, as teachers, we're trying to maybe... I think we try to teach to that critic, I guess. I don't know. This is where the metaphor kind of falls apart a little bit, but you could ruin the front of the house by being worried about the rubric. And I guess I'm getting at the external forces that teachers face in creating the front of the house in their classroom, right? And I think that the back of the house, the messiness, where the fun is, right? And where they learn to be cooks, and they're learning from mistakes, and they're making mess, and they're burning themselves, and they're burning food, and all of this chaos, like that's where the joy is, right? And I think that a lot of teachers aren't encouraged to bring their students to the back of the house to learn to cook, chefs, to learn to be mathematicians, because it's slow, it's messy, the pathway isn't clear, it's chaotic. And I also don't think that the critics, the administrations, the leaders that are evaluating math programs really have an appreciation for what it takes to let kids into the back of the house. And I don't know if I'm, you know, distorting the metaphor here that Tracy is using and bringing forward. And I hope I'm doing Tracy well, but she has planted a seed with this idea and this metaphor. And I hope the riffing on it works a little bit. But, you know, the leadership needs to really... it's important for kids to be in the back of the house. And that's where I think that they can learn their skills as a mathematician. And it's hard for us to do that. It's a big mental shift for leaders, and it's a big mental shift for teachers, because they feel that critic in the rubric, the front of the house, right? And this is how I'm going to be evaluated. And are all my desks in order? Have I written the learning objective on the board? Have I posted student work all around the room? Have I done like this checklist, right? Rather than thinking about the human experience that is really going on, and the engagement that needs to happen. And I also would say the back of the house is more community, right? It's everybody's working together. Everybody's an equal. We have roles, but everybody shifts in roles. In the front of the house, everybody, you know, the critic's sitting by himself just tasting the food. And there's so much more about a restaurant than just the taste of the food, right? But about the bigger human experience.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting is I feel like, and you obviously are much more of an expert on this, and just like, this has been your focus and your work, but I feel like our math stories as educators really impact the math stories that we foster for students. And so if we've never been to the back of the restaurant and we are uncomfortable there, you know, I wonder if that plays a role in us not taking students there. And so, you know, because, you know, this was our math story, it's like, let's just stick in like what's comfortable, and let's just stick with the rules and the procedures and the order, that we don't feel comfortable to give students that experience. And that's to no fault to teachers whatsoever. I mean, it's hard to go into something that you feel that you lack confidence in. But I wonder if, as we work on our own math stories, if that gets us more excited and motivated and inspired to change the math stories for our students. Is that kind of what you're seeing in the work that you're doing, that, you know, teacher stories impact student stories in that way?
Absolutely. Teaching is a cultural activity. And I'm quoting a little bit from Stigler and Hibbert from The Teaching Gap. Then they wrote this book called The Teaching Gap in 1999, and it was really looking cross-culturally about the script of math class. And we teach how we were taught as children, and that our teaching journey as math educators, and again, even if your listeners that are elementary and they identify as a general sort of educator, they are still a teacher of mathematics. And that journey as a teacher of mathematics began when we were students in math class. That's where we really learned how to be a math student, how math class is supposed to go, and what it means to be a good math teacher. And that's extremely damaging, because so much of what we've internalized as math students is really unproductive to our work as math teachers. Yeah. And this requires us to change a story that we've been telling ourselves for a very, very long time. And it's an individual story, but also a cultural story. And you're right about what you're saying, that it is very difficult for teachers to change that story, for us humans to change, administrators to change that story, and change what we're expecting to see in a math classroom. And that means changing a lot of minds for adults and for students. But I think it's really, in a large part of my work, I invite teachers to really look at their math story and interrogate, right? Really interrogate some of the assumptions and beliefs that we have about how math class is supposed to go. Because it's extremely important to our work. A lot of times our own thinking is getting in our own way. And so we really need to look at our own personal math story and think about how that may not be a productive way to do math class, and that we can't be teaching how we were taught. So now what's the pathway moving forward? And we can talk a little bit about that too. And this is where I really love Peter Lilliedahl's book, Building Thinking Classrooms. It's really about a pathway, a pedagogic pathway for disrupting the story of math class, that really specific actions that we can engage in. And so, I think it's extremely important for all of us to really question what math class taught us about what it means to be good at math, how math class should go, the role of assessments and grades and homework, and just how we arrange our classroom furniture and how we share authority of learning with our students and elevate their voice and help them feel valued for what they do have to offer, I think is extremely important. And so that's some of my language about how we can go about changing the story of math class. But I think it's extremely important, to see this connection, this cultural connection between I teach how I was taught, and that's a hard story to change.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to actually come back to you know, how to change our math stories as educators, because, you know, I think that's so important. That's a lot of why I do the work that I do. It is certainly why you do the work that you do. But I want to stay with students for just a second. So, you know, we've got these math stories for our students and we want to change these. And I heard you say in your presentation to our teachers at the Math Experience, you said, if you want to be a better teacher, ask your students questions or something. You said, I probably just messed up how you said it, but something along those lines. And so I'd love to hear from you. If you have any like tips or strategies or ideas around how do teachers go about, you know, creating a community that is one that changes the math stories for our students, and how do we use students' voices and students' experiences to better our ability as educators to change the stories?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the short and the sweet of it, and you have the quote right. If for any of your teachers, listeners out there that want to become a better teacher, right, that want to improve their craft, that want to do more for the students, for the young human beings that are in their classroom, ask them. Ask them what their story is, right? Ask them what their perceived expectation is. And we can do this at the beginning of the school year, right? So many times our students come in, and I've seen this, students come in and then they spend the first 4 days of math class, of school year, taking a diagnostic test, right? Sitting on a computer and getting all that data that is not helpful for teachers. It says the same thing everywhere. I have a couple kids that are doing well up here on the standardized test, and I have a bunch of kids down here that have massive gaps in their understanding. And I invite them to think about, like, what would, if they have gone through years of that, right? Years of that kind of process and story making about math class being, they feel seen for what they know and don't know, and mostly seen for their deficits about what they don't know. Right. My students aren't ready. My students can't do this. Like, that's a tremendously negative thing. And we need to stop treating our students like they're test scores that need to be raised. And so I really invite administrators and leaders, like, if you must use that diagnostic test, realize that it's expensive, a lot of time, and doesn't have much value to the humans that are involved and doesn't empower teachers to really make productive pedagogic choices. And I invite all those leaders to read Shane Safir's book, Street Data, because it explains a lot the damage that we do with this idea of satellite data, this big formalized testing data. And so if we want, right, and we can become trapped as teachers because we're trying to be better teachers and we're looking at this test scores, and it's the wrong data that we need to be looking at least on the front end of the experience when we're trying to create access to the mathematics. And the first thing that you can do is invite your students, to share their math story. How was math class for you? What does it mean to be good at mathematics? And really start to elevate student voice and share authority for recognize that they're coming in with damaged math stories. They're not coming in with academic deficits, although that may be true. Our work as teachers starts with getting to understand their story, getting the students to kind of come forward about who they are and their identity, and creating that environment and that community, which is something that I had a lot of experience with high school students, right? And it's different with that age group, but the need is there. And it's different in middle school, right? When middle school is its own chaos of like puberty and growth and hormones and and really drawing that out in an ordered way. And then getting younger students to really share that story. And, I invite teachers to think about the beginning of the school year and getting students to really listen to each other and talk to each other. And the best way to do that is to get them talking about their own story and their own experiences. That's what we are good at as human beings. Right, that creates full access if we're allowing people to engage in storytelling. And so I invite, if you're using vertical whiteboards around the room, Peter Lilliedahl's ideas, like, even if not, but having ways for students to express their pain and their trauma, but their story about math class and what we can do about that. So I think thinking about the beginning of the school year and gathering that data is really important, and going back to that over and over again throughout the school year. Because, and I say it all the time in my work and I say it in my book, it's like, I get, it's Peter who says, they don't listen to what we say, they listen to what we do. And I always say, it's not what you tell them, it's really what you're showing them, yeah. Right? And so math class has shown them for years that mathematics is boring, that mathematics is about sitting at a desk, being shown how to think, shown how to do it, shown how to get answers on routine problems. And it's been really damaging to a lot of math stories. And so I think really thinking about unpacking that and bringing it forward and then working with your community of learners in your classroom to challenge and change that story. What do we want our math story to be? And I think every single human being in that math class wants to love mathematics, wants to have joy as a mathematical thinker. And that's where we really need to be focusing our efforts. And I invite throughout the school year to continue to like ask your students, how was your week in, you know, math class? And if you're giving traditional assessments or any sort of assessment, that one of the questions on there, or several of the questions can be, you know, how was your experience? Talk to me about this. How's math class going for you? If you could change one thing about how math class is going, what would it be? And I also invite teachers to be like, hey, what grade would you give me for this marking period, right? Like if you're going to grade your students, you really need to have them an opportunity to grade you, give you the feedback. And it may be hard as a teacher to read that. It can be painful because sometimes students are bitter and brutally honest. But I think that there's a significant need to interview and elevate the voice of students in hearing the story that they have and creating that opportunity. And I think the last thing that I offer is to know yourself as a human being and know how you are when you're frustrated, when you're overwhelmed, because it happens all the time as a teacher, right? When you're feeling really defeated or you're fighting all these obstacles and now you turn that frustration onto your students sometimes. We do this as teachers. We just have bad days. And I, as a high school teacher, once a week, usually on Friday, I would ask the question, do I owe anybody an apology in this room? And I'm doing this with all my students standing. I don't want to be standing and them sitting because then I'm standing over them, right? But let's stand up in a circle so we can all see each other. And I ask them some reflective questions and invite that voice. And it's awkward at first. They don't like to speak up. And it takes a couple of weeks. But I always put it out there. Do I owe anybody an apology? Was I short to you? Did I diminish you in any way? Because I know that I just get into this tunnel vision of like, I have so much to do right now. And I know I communicate, I show some students that I don't have time for them. Yeah. And that's a hard thing to own, right? And right. I can really shut down a kid and cause some trauma. And I need to create space where the feedback is two way, right? Students, me to the students, but also students back to me. And if you're stuck as a teacher and you want to get a better teacher, just ask your students. They're watching you all the time and they see your hypocrisies. They see a disconnect between our actions and our statements, right? And they become really bitter about this hypocrisy. Yeah, you say you value mistakes and then you fail me on this test, right? And so again, what are we showing our students and thinking about that and asking for their voice? And I think it's not something that we do enough as teachers. And it's a simple shift about creating some space. And some teachers might be like, well, how do I do this? And this is where I employ you to reach into your talents and passions as an educator. You can create community and have a 10-15 minute conversation, right, about this and figure out what works and be a researcher with your own students and gather the data that really motivates you and can tell you how to improve. Because it's not going to be that diagnostic test and it's not going to be that other, you know, normed assessments throughout the year. And it's certainly not going to be the end of the year standardized assessment. So really collecting that other data about the human experience, what story are they making for themselves and how does that compare to the story we want them to have?
Yeah, there were so many good little nuggets that you just shared in what you talked about, you know, as far as like students, you know, really noticing what we do rather than what we say. Like we can say we don't, you know, getting the answer is not the thing that we value most. But then when a student shares the right answer and we just move on without really digging into the thinking behind that, that's where it doesn't align. But what I really, really love out of what you just said, and I think this is a big mindset shift is, you know, I think for me, I'm going to speak for me and my experience growing up as a student, it was very much like not the students against the teacher, but it was very clear that like the teacher was up here, they were passing along knowledge to us. And like, that was it. The feedback came from the top down and that was it. And I just had this visual as you were explaining, you know, you standing in front of the classroom, talking to your students, asking like, is there anything that I need to apologize for? Or even just like, I don't know, I just had this visual of just like, we're all on the same team. Like we're all on the same side. Yes, there's like, you know, the teacher as, you know, the facilitator. And I think even just being open to receiving feedback from students, I think just kind of maybe allow students to feel safer, maybe put their guard down, maybe allows them to be more open to feedback because they see that you're open to feedback. Like it just was, I don't know. I don't know if anybody else, you know, who's watching this interview had that same idea, but it just kind of, it felt like putting it, it minimized the gap between the teacher and the students and made it very much like a, we're in this together. We are all here to grow and learn alongside each other. And I wonder if that is actually very healing for math teachers and their stories, and also maybe minimizes the pressure to feel like, I've got to do this right. I've got to be perfect. I've got to know all the things to show students all of the things. And instead it's like, we are learning together. We are growing together. So I don't know if that was what you intended and everything that you shared, but that was just very like, I don't know, somewhat like healing for me to hear that and, yeah. And think of it in that way.
Yeah. And it's hard to be in that mindset because we know the math already, right? Like, and we're always expanding and growing. And sometimes we think that, you know, the mathematics that we know and how we think about mathematics is complete. But it's very much unfinished. And we have so much to learn from how our other students are making meaning about the mathematics that we have. But it's hard as a teacher to be a curious, like, whoa, can you believe that happened? What's next? And creating that wonder, it's really hard to create wonder with something that you're so familiar with. Mm-hmm. It's hard to do that as a teacher, but we need to make sure that our students are always seeing us as the authority in the room. And to change that story is hard because we do know more math than they do, right? And so how do we shift that identity? And as you were talking, like standing up and sitting down, that it's hard to share authority if you're the only one standing in the room and they're all sitting down. Right? Yeah. Just thinking about the optics of all all faced one direction, all looking at one person in the room, and that person is us. And how do we shift that story? And so all standing, all sitting, being in a circle, changing the form, just changing how the, you know, we move about a classroom can be extremely important. So I hope that adds to what you're saying. I'm not sure, but.
Absolutely. It does. And I think that's why Peter Lilienthal's work is so powerful. I mean, that's like one of many reasons. And I know you do a lot with his work as well. Because do you lead maybe professional development alongside Building Thinking Classrooms?
Yeah, I do. I work for Peter officially. I'm one of the official BTC team members along with a couple
that's
of
what I thought.
Moving educators and facilitate workshops on his behalf. He's really busy and super successful. And I am super grateful as being a pretty small fish in a big pond to be able to swim alongside him and learn with him and have opportunities to engage with teachers. And I'm super passionate about his work because there was a large body of those 14 practices I came across as my own teaching practice back, you know, starting 25 years ago. And about getting students want to work at a board. They're more engaged. Mm-hmm. Great. And I get to see their thinking. Oh my gosh, now I can move students around the room. I shouldn't be having students sit down, right? And finding ways to like do something like that.
You know, we've talked about a lot about like math stories, and we've obviously talked about teachers' math stories and identities kind of like woven in there. But one thing that I know that you are really passionate about is professional development and just taking a different approach to how teachers and leaders approach professional development for teachers. So I would love to hear from you. What does the like ideal professional, what does ideal professional growth look like for a teacher?
I think that that's a good question that all teachers and all leaders should be asking themselves, right? Because it's really about figuring it out for them. And my reply is just what I've learned from my own journey as a teacher and the countless colleagues that I've worked intimately with in school environments and alongside with in math departments. And then also the teachers that I've traveled, met with and worked with lesson study around California and the state. And I I've kind of learned, like, what does it take to become a better teacher? And because professional development is falling short. And if there are any professional principals that are feeling defensive out there, it's not their fault either. Like, we have 25 years of research that says that teachers have no mechanism for getting better. And culturally, we just don't have that infrastructure. There's such a huge disconnect between our professional learning and our professional practice. And if principals are looking to do something different, they need to start embedding our professional learning with our professional practice, meaning we need to be learning in each other's classrooms. That whatever opportunities you have as an educator, as a leader, to create opportunities for students, for teachers to watch math class from the student perspective, is probably the best form of professional development that they can create, because you're positioning teachers as capable of directing their own professional learning. You're positioning them so they can see what they need to see to change their mind, to recognize that maybe what I'm doing also in the classroom is creating the same missed opportunities, right? We see a lot more missed opportunities when we're in each other's classrooms watching teaching from a different perspective. And so I invite principals to create those opportunities. And I also invite principals to foster those collegial relationships that teachers need so they can actually talk more openly, frankly, about the work that they're doing. And so those are some of the softer steps but that leaders can do. But I invite principals to think about, if you want teachers to elevate student voice and share authority for learning, you need to create professional development that does the same thing. And I've been in so many professional developments where all the teachers are sitting in the room, all looking at the principal at the front of the room, talking, and the principal's talking about how education needs to be different and class needs to go different, but they're modeling the same unproductive behavior. Mm-hmm. And so I invite principals, if you're looking for something to do, create an after-school program. You can wrangle in 25 or 30 kids once a week to stay after school, right? Feed them some pizza, bribe them if you need to, but create an after-school math lab that isn't remediation. It isn't any, it's this, you know, and then have teachers come in. Somebody's teaching the lesson that week and it's just some rich task. It doesn't need to be anything super formal. And everybody can be in there, multiple grade levels. And we're looking at this math story piece and this identity and agency. So I really invite principals to stop doing what you're doing. Really look at, what does ideal professional development look like? And how can I position teachers to be teacher-centered and teacher-directed in their own learning, and position them as capable and position them as active partners in each other's growth, and let go as a principal of this need to control professional development? And I think those are some of the shifts that we can make.
You know, I love hearing just all of your thoughts for how leaders can change professional development in their schools. And you know, I have so much respect for administrators. I would do not want to be one. I would not thrive as an administrator. That's not my skill set. I'm married to an administrator. But you know, I do know that there are a lot of teachers who are in schools who may, you know, their administrator may not be listening to this, and they may not be exposed to the same idea of how do we change professional development. And so for the teacher who's in that situation, how do they change the math community within their school? I guess, like, what are some tactical things that they might be able to do when their administrator maybe isn't quite on board yet with making the change from the top down?
Yeah, that's why, you know, I wrote my book directly to teachers, is to cut out that. I mean, it could be a book study that coaches and leaders can use to coordinate learning. But I also wanted to speak to the teacher that may be feeling really alone. Like, I'm really worried about how lonely this profession can be. And I feel like teachers are really craving community. And so what teachers can do, I think the first step is to give yourself some grace as a math teacher, as a teacher of mathematics. There is nobody in this country delivering perfect math instruction. Nobody is achieving high levels of equity day in and day out. Nobody is having these classrooms where all humans are having this positive, soul-shifting, enlightening math experience every single day. So chill out, right? Nobody is doing that, right? We are all imperfect. So give yourself some grace and have the courage to find a buddy, at least one professional buddy. Doesn't need to be the same grade level, right? Somebody that you can open up to and talk about your math story and how your math story is impacting your teaching story, right? Engage in this relationship building around some conversations that we don't normally have. And that's a large part of my work, is about sharing our story with each other as educators so we can really understand, as colleagues, what we have in common and what makes us unique. And that does not require a principal to set that up. It does require us to have the courage to reach out to other colleagues. And I would say that these colleagues may not be your, you know, your happy hour buddies, right? That really might need to be a different type of colleague that you admire their pedagogy or their approach to education, and you recognize that you have something to learn from each other. So there's this internal sort of piece of you are a better teacher than the system has created for you, right? Like, I feel like teachers feel like it's their fault that they're falling short, and there's a lot we can do to change, but just give yourself a little bit of grace. You're working in an unjust system. So yeah. I think that that's extremely important that we recognize that. And then the last piece I would say is, and I tell teachers this, we are all wrong about something right now. You, me, every listener out there, we are wrong about what we believe about effective math teaching and about the effectiveness of our actions. Like, and the story we are telling ourselves isn't as true as we think it is, but we want to get stuck in our story. We want to be right. And so much of our professional development is being asking ourselves, what might I be wrong about? What might I not see? Whose vantage or perspective points might I not be valuing? Whose voices is being diminished? And asking ourselves, is the story I'm telling myself really true? And the best way to do that is to shift your own vantage, to shift your perspective on your professional identity and practice. And it comes back to that same old advice that I give teachers: whatever pupil free time that you have, spend it watching the teaching of the learning of mathematics in somebody else's classroom. You'll see what you need to see to recognize what you're wrong about and how you can grow. And it's the most powerful thing that you can do. And as an educator, I know that our pupil free time is so precious. And this is where I implore teachers to really leverage, lean on their principal. Hey, you want me to grow as a teacher principal? I need you to cover my class for 30 minutes. It's super easy. Come on in. We're doing independent reading or whatever we're doing. Or come on in and teach a math lesson for me. Develop your own math chop, teaching chops. Here's a task. Have fun with it. I want to go observe a colleague, right? And really implore on the administrators in that room to provide pupil free time, release time for teachers to go do this work. And as teachers, this may be a little bit unpopular. This may mean pushing back on the agreements that your union has made with your administration and actually working outside your agreed upon hours to meet and to collaborate and spend time. And as teachers, like, we have to do this for ourselves. And I want us to be strategic about what we can do in our working day. And I know it is a lot for me to ask an elementary school teacher that may only have 2 hours of prep time a week to give up half of that, to watch another math colleague. And I'm like, yeah, because it's going to make everything else that you're doing more efficient, because you're going to be moving through and seeing your unproductive beliefs and seeing your unproductive actions. And you're going to be asking, oh, what am I showing my students when I do this? And how, right, what can we learn from each other? So I think it's extremely important to seek that vantage. So yeah. Yeah, I think those are the things. Be in each other's classrooms. You can't go it alone. You need a relationship buddy. Give yourself some grace. We're all imperfect. And if you want to be unfinished, focus on that human data. It really levels the playing field.
I absolutely love all of those recommendations. And, you know, you mentioned that there's going to be a time where every one of us is going to experience that we were wrong about something. And I truly believe that. One question that I asked Robert Kaplinsky when I did his interview that I want to ask you: what is something that you believed to be true about math that you no longer believe to be true? So you had to change your mind on it.
Yeah, I used to believe that my job as an educator, a math teacher, always story focused in my work. That's why I became a teacher. But I used to think that I would evaluate myself based on how well I was able to guide my students through a math lesson and have them not experience anxiety that shuts them down. Like, if it would be a field trip kind of metaphor, it'd be like, okay, kids, we're going to go into this forest of a math lesson. And if you just follow me, stay close, follow me, stay on the trail. We following, take these notes. Here you go. This is how you do it. We're getting there. We're getting there. Lead them through the forest. And I turn around and be like, we made it. But did they really get to experience the forest and appreciate the forest, right? No, they're following me in my path. But I used to think that being a really good teacher was about leading my students down a pathway and keeping them all together and getting them to follow me down that pathway.
Yeah.
And that leads to a lot of that script of direct instruction in the math class. Hey, kids, sit there and let me show you how to do this. Just trust me. I will show it to you in a way that you will understand. And all I'm doing is encouraging mimicking. And I realized that that's what I had to get away from. And it took a long time. Like, even when I realized it, I still find myself falling into those habits of not believing that my students are capable of figuring it out for themselves. And I need to create adventurers that want to go into the forest, explore, and come back and tell us what they saw, right? And learn from each other. And my math lessons need to be the same way. I need to let my students get lost. I need to let my students struggle and to fail. And I need to have my students learn how to do perseverance and thinking about my pedagogy, about positioning them, what's enough to keep them moving forward and keep it productive, but not stripping them and robbing them of their own agency and their own story and their own journey. And I think that that was something that I changed pretty early about my practice as much as I could. Not to say I did it perfectly. We're all imperfect, but that was a big shift for me. And something I used to believe about effective math teaching and no longer do. And it's a brilliant question. It's one of my favorites as well.
Yeah. And so I think that's, you know, why I, you know, your book is The Imperfect and Unfinished Math Teacher. I think that with that, it provides such grace for we don't know everything. It's okay. We're going to change our minds. And so I love that question. I love hearing you share how your mindset changed around what effective math teaching looks like. And of course, that tells me exactly why you love the work of Peter Liljedahl so much, because it aligns so much with kind of where you landed on what instruction, what effective math instruction looks like. So I just absolutely loved having you. I would love to know, you know, we'll list everything as far as like your website and your book and all of that in the notes that goes along with the show. But I'd love to hear from you. Where is the best place that if teachers want to connect with you, where should they go to connect with you?
Yeah, super simple is chaseorton.com, just my name.com. But I want to make a plug that I'm making a free audio companion to my book. Totally accessible. Yes. And the videos that follow it, it's on YouTube. It's a podcast. They're about 15, 20 minutes long, meant to be a little nugget of wisdom. You can listen to them from your work, talk about with your colleagues. They're videos you can use as professional development with small groups of teachers. And they're a lot of fun. I get to rewrite the chapters a little bit. It's not a book on tape, but each episode mirrors a chapter in my book. You don't need to buy my book. It makes my book more accessible, the ideas here. So I'm inviting teachers to embark on a journey, and you can find it on YouTube or Instagram at the handle Imperfect Unfinished. And it'll be on my website again soon. And I would love for people to join that journey, listen to those videos, you know, spend some time with me in your commute, have some coffee with me, and then reach out to me on social media. Let me know what you're thinking. That's my plug. And if you want to find me and get in touch with me, chaseorton.com is the easiest way to do that.
Awesome. Well, we will get all of that linked up. Chase, thank you so much for coming. I just absolutely adore talking to you. And I hope we get to talk math again soon.
I do too. Thank you so much. Thanks for geeking out with me, and I'll see you down the road.